Greetings. Welcome to... You guys can't laugh every time I do the intro.
I was laughing at the...
The onus is going to shift to one of your shoulders.
Okay.
Okay, what are we going to name this thing? I had another idea that I was like, oh, that could work in the shower, and then I just forgot it again.
You're fucked. Dude. You need like a sticky note.
I know.
Oh, they have shower sticky notes where you put them in the...
Really?
Yeah.
But it's like, I was in the shower, so I was like, oh, sweet. Like, I'm just going to get out of here and write it down. Like, there's no way I'm forgetting by the end of the...
You need a waterproof phone. So yeah. You can be on your phone in the shower and just...
The Galaxy Active, or whatever it's called.
Welcome to the Galaxy Active podcast, sponsored by Google.
Not Samsung?
Get all of your surveillance needs covered by one company. Google, we're watching you.
Alphabet.
Oh, yeah, Alphabet. All right, thanks for listening to this as of yet unnamed podcast. I'm Derek.
Oh, I'm Sam.
And I'm Kale.
And today we're going to talk about Love in 3D by...
Gaspar Noé.
This is the director of Enter the Void, which I didn't see. And I assume some other stuff.
Irreversible.
Irreversible.
That's what kind of like put him on the map for a lot of people our age, right?
Yeah.
Irreversible?
No.
A lot of people I know love Irreversible, and
really?
That's how I got into him. He also did a movie before that called I Stand Alone, which is really good.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually.
And I think that's his whole filmography, except for, like, shorts and other things.
He's a young...
I think he's, like, 47.
Yeah.
That's young.
That's young enough.
I saw Into the Void before Irreversible, but Irreversible was, like, kind of on the map for me longer than Into the Void was, because people always talked about it, so...
I was so excited for Enter the Void for like 2 to 3 years because it was at Cannes and it took like a year and a half to come out and I had already watched all the like pre and post stuff work on it.
Yeah.
Like, and it looked so beautiful and rich.
It was beautiful and rich.
Yeah, but I thought it was kind of meandering and not a very good movie. This should be... Maybe we should have context on him just for fun.
But also we could like... I think these opinions also apply to Love.
All right, so maybe before we jump into that, we'll do our little intro shtick.
Okay, yeah.
Theodore, have you seen any good YouTube videos lately?
Shit, actually, no.
Whoa.
I watched...
You've seen them all.
On Cinema at the Cinema with Greg Turkington and Tim Heidecker and kind of like their gang who you don't... Can't really tell if they're really in on the joke or not.
Okay.
But... Yeah, so I've just been invested in that world, and so has Sam, actually.
Yeah, I love On Cinema at the Cinema. I've watched every episode maybe 3 or 4 or 5 times.
I haven't done that.
Love them.
I've watched them all.
They're so great, and the new one is one of the best.
I like that they do not even talk about movies anymore, except for when they rate them.
Yes, yeah. They don't go into the movies at all.
They haven't seen the movies, but they give it like a 5 out of 5.
I've seen like a second of it, and I was like, oh, that seems cool, and
then
I completely forgot to watch it.
It's really good.
The whole show's great, and it takes, you know, 20 minutes to watch a season, so in theory, it would take almost no amount of time to catch up.
Nice.
But it's great. Rest in peace, Tom Cruise, Heidecker.
How's your fantasy team?
I won the last week, not by quite as large a margin as I had hoped. And right now I'm actually really struggling against this team that has, like, a absentee manager. So, pretty embarrassing, but it's okay. I'm hoping the two players of mine that should have been the best have been, like, really underperforming on the season. So, like, you have to imagine they'll get it together, like, get your shit together with Marcus Aldridge and Marcus All. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
How are your grandparents, Sam?
They're great. They saw Steve Jobs. They liked it.
Really?
They saw Bridge of Spies. They liked that.
Okay.
They saw Our Brand is Crisis. They said it was a horrible name, but they liked that.
I don't know what that is.
They see every movie.
I adore them, not only because they're my grandparents, but because they do like a lot of movies, and we email back and forth when they're in Florida.
Oh, nice.
About movies. And Our Brand is Crisis was that Billy Bob Thornton, Sandra Bullock movie.
Wow, it sounds like
it. I think it was supposed to be because Billy Bob is on Fargo.
Okay.
And then Sandra Bullock did Gravity.
That's
and
like
she's a huge
that's like
popular
an instant Oscar.
It should be like a big deal, and I think the name Our Brand is Crisis.
It's kind of a cool name. I like that name.
Yeah, but I think it's so horrible for mainstream.
Oh yeah, it's like Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and both of them made $4 at the box office. So anyway,
just the sale of 2 3D glasses.
Yeah,
Our Brand is Crisis sounds like a Tumblr by someone that like.
Or yeah, it sounds like a
an
album name of like a
Mogwai. Early
2000s.
Like,
or like a new metal band that's like.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's a little bit too subtle for a new metal band.
Like, the band could be called, like, Sphinx. And then, like, they'd have, like...
Okay, yeah, I see
be, like,
now.
There'd be, like, nails on the cover,
now.
And it'd be, like, underneath, like, Our Brand's Crisis.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Right.
Like a, like, Judas Priest like album cover. Like,
yeah, but they have, like, really, like, palmy dress and stuff. Yeah.
Did you guys just get a group text from Brandon?
Let me see.
Yep.
Yes, I did.
All right, hold up.
Oh, well,
pause the show. Okay, it's a gif of Shia LaBeouf.
I've seen 100 of them lately.
Oh, what do you get? Let's talk about him for just a second.
Sam, he's wearing your jacket.
He is.
What do you guys
think? What is he doing?
Is Shia LaBeouf A, a genius?
Mm-hmm.
B, an embarrassment?
Mm-hmm.
Or C, somewhat gracefully navigating the waters of his sort of like post fame.
I would say.
Oh my God! Go ahead.
Sorry, I've talked about it this a lot actually.
Go ahead.
Oh, cool.
He's not a genius,
right? Okay,
I think he is someone that is slightly artistic, that has very artistic friends.
Yeah,
and they give him ideas,
okay.
And he implements them in a like half understanding way.
Yeah. Okay.
And so he comes off as, like, arty, but really he's only kind of understanding what he's doing. And with being in, like, what was that movie, the two-part movie?
Oh, Nymphomaniac.
Yeah, Nymphomaniac. He was like, oh, this is my in. I'm being, like, an arty person.
Yeah.
But that movie was so bad.
It's on Netflix, right?
It was a misery.
It was a terrible movie. And so, like, you know what I mean? He's, like, halfway there.
Okay.
He was in the arty movie, but it was bad.
Okay.
So,
I mean, this is my, before you give your opinion, this is, I feel like the baseline is like, all right, who else was like kind of famous as a teen and a tween,
mm-hmm.
and like
Miley Cyrus
didn't continue being famous, right? Uh-huh. Like really major, like the trajectory of their career was not just like a rocket ship shooting upward, you know, like,
yeah.
And how did they handle that? Yeah. Like Miley Cyrus, Amanda Bynes,
yeah.
Frankie Muniz.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Frankie Muniz like is maybe low-key, like, the best, because he's just, like, a Formula One racer now.
Yes, yeah. He is, yeah.
I would say Miley Cyrus doesn't fit into this category.
Really?
Because she's very famous, though.
She's transcended
her original fame. But I bet she's, like, not making very much money.
I think she's transcended her fame that she used to have.
It seems like her album sales.
Okay, there's definitely, like, stage one Miley Cyrus and, like, stage two Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
And she's, like, so all these people are, like, navigating the problem of, like, I got famous doing teen shit.
Yeah.
I'm no longer a teen and can therefore not do that stuff.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? So maybe she hasn't like suffered a knock to her fame, but she's had to sort of transition.
Yeah.
And I feel like although she might be like the most prominent of them, she doesn't get like a good rating in terms of like being cool. Like she's just like wearing dreadlocks and
talking about weed a lot.
Yeah, like
but
it's kind
I think
of
she's,
lame.
I think she's kind of interesting and progressive in her
it's
own
not,
way.
She's not like Amanda Bynes.
No.
She's not like someone you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like your career's just like running into the ground over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also like, she's like crafting a persona that's far less successful for me than I think she thinks she is. I think she's like, I'm so cool. Everyone knows that I like weed now.
Yeah, yeah.
I wear these weird outfits.
Yeah.
And I'm
pretty sure she's not looking for a 25-year-old man demographic. Pretty sure it's younger women.
Yeah, maybe.
So you're just not, I think, part of her click that she wants her world
but I think
click.
There's also
yeah,
like a lot of women who are just like she's appropriating black culture and it's not cool like it's kind of fucked up
yeah wait
and isn't she like feuding with Nicki Minaj like how popular can you be with that demographic if you're feuding with like the most famous
I don't know
so this is my point. I feel like Shia is doing better than Miley Cyrus in terms of like
authenticity
pretentious fuckhead like arty people like us are going to be like, oh,
Shia LaBeouf. Know Shia LaBeouf?
what a good market to be.
I mean, that's who I am.
I'm gonna
put some weight on that.
I think that Shia reminds me most of James Franco in they are people who are leveraging their famous actors. They're not good actors, necessarily speaking. So they can't be out-and-out actors. Yeah. They can't just act because they're not good at it, necessarily. And so I feel like they need an outlet for their creativity, in a way. And it's doing sort of performance-y pieces.
Well, and I also feel like the stuff that they're doing, both James Franco and Shia LaBeouf, that's a good point, is, like, maybe it's not conceptually that interesting, but it's also stuff that, like, an even slightly less famous person can't do.
Yeah.
Like you have to be, like, fucking Damien Hirst or, like... Ai Weiwei can't do that shit.
Yeah.
No.
Like, those people might be, like, more accomplished artists, but, like, they do those same things, and it's not, like, no one cares.
Yeah, well, Marina, I mean, she did, like, the Artist is Present, and that was kind of a big deal.
But that's, like, more art than what these
people are doing. I think they're coming off the back of that, and they're trying to be... Like, Tilda Swinton was in a box at the MoMA for a while.
Okay,
Like, I feel like off the back of Marina, I feel like people are... But... What is performance art in the most banal sense, which is just sitting in a place and not doing much.
But I feel like the Artist is Present thing got even less attention when Shia LaBeouf just wore the bag over his head and said, like... And just said, like, I'm not famous anymore.
I think the Artist is Present was huge. It was, like, a cultural phenomenon.
Bit of a cult thing. Like, more and more people are getting jazzed about it.
Well, there were, like, there was, like, a huge spike in people visiting the MoMA just for that.
Yeah.
But, like hundreds of percents.
Yeah, but, like, as, like, a cultural type of thing. Right. Like, my parents don't know about that, but they know about Miley Cyrus.
Sure. So, well, it's because Marina's a Russian performance artist from the 70s who is now in her 60s, and she's doing something at the MoMA.
Well, and even, like, this is not to say that Marina should be doing what James Franco and Shia LaBeouf are doing, because I think she's doing cooler stuff, but she couldn't. Like, their whole shtick is about, like, cannibalizing their fame in a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
And, like, she doesn't have that same kind of fame.
No. She has her body. And that's what her performance art is about.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that she's doing is better, like,
yes,
unequivocally.
Yeah.
But,
and they're riding the back of her.
I guess my point is just that they're, like, they're doing a really unique thing that kind of only they can do.
Because they're
already famous. Which makes it interesting, right? That, like,
But that's also what makes it, like, confusing.
Yeah, because it's like, wait, does this really matter, or are you just famous?
Yeah, or, like, are you, like, aware of the implications?
Yeah.
And I also think it's a little banal, too, just because it's, like, it's trying to be arty in a way. Like, it would just be interesting if Shia was just like, hey, I'm going to watch some movies, check me out on Periscope, that's fine. But, like, the, like, vaulting it up as, like, something that's arty and, like, masterful in a way is kind of strange to me and in a weird leverage of fame. But yeah. I do like that.
Well, I kind of respect that. It's like, yeah, you aren't that interested in making another Transformers movie. You probably can't get, you know, like, you made Nymphomaniac, but I don't think, like, David Lynch is trying to put you in a movie. Not that he's trying to make movies at all. But,
yeah.
You know, so it's just like, you're sort of leveraging what you've got.
Yeah.
In, like, I feel like you're doing what I would do, maybe, in that same position, where you're just like, oh, I want to do something kind of cool. I don't really have a lot of avenues to do something really cool.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's pretty good. Like,
yeah, you're trying a little something different.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like there's, like, he wants to do something, like, really heavy and deep.
Yeah.
But if he does, he knows that he'll lose, like, a lot of the same attention he has right now.
Well, I don't necessarily think he's that deep of a person either. I think it would be hard for him to do anything but leverage his fame in an interesting way. I don't think they're trying to do something that has a lot of depth. Or James Franco. I don't think they're like, ooh, guess what? You know what I mean? They're
not trying to be arty. No, I think James Franco is. Like, James Franco went to, like, a fucking 100 MFA programs and shit. Like, and was just like, I'm so smart. And, like, for a minute, also, everyone bought it and was like, dude, James Franco's really smart.
Yeah.
And then, like, book? A year later, everyone was just like,
Yeah,
because cool. He was in, like, whatever, the Wizard of Oz movie and shit.
Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah. Which was also, like, writing books and stuff.
Yeah, Palo Alto.
My mom bought me that and I never read it.
I assume that it's, like, okay.
I gave it to Emily's sister.
I want to see the movie. I haven't.
I have yet to see it. All I know is that the Shia LaBeouf thing was put on by New Hive, which is founded by Lindsay Howard, who I love. I think Lindsay Howard's beautiful, so if she's listening to this, I love you so much. Anyway, all right. Shia was in Nymphomaniac, which is...
Oh my god.
Well, you ruined my transition.
No, keep going.
this is going to be such a good one. I don't know.
No, do it.
Shia LaBeouf was in Nymphomaniac, which was a film about sexual obsession, and was pretty graphic in a lot of ways for a lot of people. And do you know what's another film?
What?
Sort of along the same lines, except it's actually interesting and not just Wes Anderson doing pornography.
What?
Is Gaspar Noé's Love in 3D.
Oh my gosh, you did it. Segway of the year.
Can you hit the thing? Because I probably said it wrong.
Oh, yeah, here, hang on. Wake up from sleep.
Quick note.
Which is...
Gaspar Noé.
That's really beautiful. Love in 3D.
Quick note. The parts in Love in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
When they had the text on the screen.
Yeah.
I was like, am I watching Nymphomaniac right now?
Yeah, the text on the screen was pretty bad. It kind of reminded me of Goodbye to Language as well.
Oh, yeah. No,
Murphy's
that's
Law.
That's what I thought.
Well, I thought with Murphy's Law, I thought of Interstellar. I was like, oh, dear Lord,
yeah,
not
you,
this
like,
crap again.
Leaned and over to me while Reed was like,
yeah,
speaking.
Yeah.
When that happened, I was like, oh, this is going to be like kind of a thing throughout the movie. And then, no.
No, it just doesn't.
It just stopped.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
That's fine. That's okay.
I'm glad it stopped in a way.
Yeah. Words on the screen.
I wish it never happened.
No, words
thumbs
on
down. Words
yeah,
down.
I don't know why I just did that.
Nobody will be able to see Derek thumbs down words on screen.
Okay, what points do we have to make about this movie?
Well,
okay, I think like the first thing you say about it is like this is a 3D movie of that like largely consists of people having sex.
Yeah,
75% maybe. 65.
It's actually probably like 50.
You think so?
Because there's, like, a lot of him, like, walking around the city and stuff, but, like, that's a large amount.
50 to 60% of sex.
Yeah, sure.
Emily said 80%.
That seems a little...
That's excessive.
Yeah.
But it was, like, in some of the sequences, like, the one that I really like, 7 to 8 minutes long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's, like, pretty excessive in a way, which I think is the purpose of it.
Yes. Well, and I think that's kind of how it was built. You're just like, oh my gosh, this movie's going to be like pornographic.
Yeah.
It's just going to be like sex. And
yeah.
It's this like, you know, kind of arty director putting his name on it. So that makes it interesting in a way because it's like there's that whole conflict of like, is it actually good or is it just like you said it was an arty movie and it's just people fucking.
Yeah, like 70s this, blue movies.
That
yeah.
was like the main thing that I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
During the movie, I was like, okay, like I understand that he's building that the sex is like, sometimes meaningless, sometimes not. Sometimes it's like towards the end when they were trying to have sex to like fall back in love or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I get what he's doing there. But then like earlier in the movie, I didn't quite understand it. And then I had like a realization when they're having like the threesome.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, she's in between them.
Yeah, I get it.
It's ruining their relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. But then like when there were scenes after that where it just like kept going, it seemed almost like filler to me.
Well, this is my thought about that, if I can say one thing.
Yes.
And I do think that some of the shots were beautiful. There's like a...
Yeah, definitely.
Like
the lighting was all like incredible.
And
it was
the
amazing,
colors,
the whole movie.
The colors were unbelievable. If I could take one thing from that movie, it would just be the colors of it.
Okay.
They're so rich, so vibrant.
Like
they're coming right in your... Like, and there's
that's
like...
Into the Void is, too.
She was like, like laying in a yellow sheet, which kind of mimics a scene in Contempt, a Godard movie. And then there's also a scene where she's on like a red blanket, which is like the Pola 10... poster. I think that's how you say that. And anyway, just an unfathomably beautiful colors to me. But the thing about the sex being excessive to me is I think it's twofold. I think Gaspar Noé is giving the audience exactly what they want. Are you gonna do it?
Just keep going.
Okay. I think that what
Gaspar Noé
was trying to do was he was giving the audience exactly what you want. Okay, I'm making a movie about sex. Guess what the audience is going to want? A lot of sex. Do you know what I mean? But I think he's doing so much of it, and it's so prevalent, that in itself is a theme in the film of monotonous,
yeah,
almost borderline dull sex.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's true in relationships a lot of the time, is that like love and affection intermingles with like the banality of being with one person and like obligation. I feel like you were obligated to sit through all the sex, just like people are in relationships, sort of like obligated to spend time together, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of about, to me anyway, it itself was a theme of the movie.
Yeah, that's what I was saying too, until I read this interview where he was saying that he thought that pornography was art.
Uh-huh.
And so I got, like, confused as to, like, sure, that could be, like, a theme for the movie for you, but I don't understand if he was actually trying to do that. Because I was thinking almost like when he says pornography is art, he just wanted to have that in his movie because he likes it.
That's sort of how, like, this is something that happens, I think, foolishly for me, maybe, with a lot of movies like that, where it's like, this is the thing about the movie. Like, this movie's going to have a lot of sex. Or, like, maybe, like, a Terrence Malick movie, where, like, this movie's going to have a lot of just, like, shots and then, like, voiceovers.
Yeah.
And then you, like, kind of in your mind, like, that's the thing of the movie. So you go in, you're like, that'll be, like, 80% of the movie. And then you're like, oh, there's other stuff?
Yeah.
I guess, like, I should have known there would be, but at the same time, I'm a little surprised.
Yeah.
Although, I kind of have a theory that for this movie, he was just like, yeah, this movie's going to be, like, 80% sex.
Yeah.
And then a story got in there that he was maybe kind of interested in and ended up, I mean, obviously, I don't know this. It's just a guess, but maybe the story ended up being more of it than he really thought was going to happen.
I thought it felt misguided at times. Especially in the scene with actually him in it. And, oh, no, he wasn't in it. It was at the party where the main character cheats on Elektra. Because he says, like, there's not movies with, like, meaningful, purposeful sex.
And you don't... there's a scene where the character, the main character, who is himself a filmmaker, talks about wanting to make a movie about sex.
Yes.
That
meant something.
Right, which I think, like, anyone watching the movie sort of sees that and is just like, okay, this is talking about the movie that I'm watching right now, on some level. And I interpreted it as fairly straightforward as, like, this is the mission statement of this movie. But it sounds like you feel like the movie Love in 3D underachieved the objectives that the movie the character was talking about set out.
Because, like, oh, there's parts in this movie... I mean, at the time in that movie, like, when that scene happened, I was like, oh, this is about the movie, and I feel like the sex up to this point has all had a purpose. But then, like, after that point in the movie, I felt like some of it was meaningless, and I was, like, upset that, like, the movie was, like, working against itself.
But that's what life is.
Yeah.
Life is full of meaningless things.
Yeah, but, like, what I'm confused is, like...
what the mission statement of the movie is.
The intent versus what actually happened.
Sure.
Because, like... even if you take that from the movie, it could be, like, meaningless if the person making the movie didn't...
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, I don't know. I guess we could talk about, like, art in general if we start saying stuff like that.
Well, I think that the sex... I wasn't really thinking about the sex specifically in terms of, like, meaningfulness, not meaningfulness.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it, like, looked really good, and I was surprised during the movie, like, how not weird it was to be sitting in a dark room with, like, mostly strangers, just, like... watching 3D.
Except for the people sex. That, like,
Well, this is a thing that I'm going to have to bring up.
Yeah, you went to both screenings.
I saw the movie. There were two screenings of it, only two screenings. I went to both of them. Derek and I saw one, and that was on Sunday. The first one, that was 2 hours earlier.
The Lord's Day.
The Lord's Day. Yeah. On the Lord's Day Sunday, we saw this movie at 7 p.m.
Uh-huh.
It was again played Tuesday, 9:30 p.m.
This is what I saw.
Everyone was incredibly respectful, and
the first day
it was a weird mix of people, 20s to 60s and 70s, different groups of people, different demographics.
Yeah, really. So when we coming out of theater, I was surprised. I thought it was just going to be like some pervs, some like art geeks.
Yeah, and that's it.
It was just like everyone. Like
it was just every
single person.
It seemed
like they just got.
I don't remember. Oh, the point was, the fact of the matter is, it was a bunch of different demographics, a bunch of different people were there, and everyone was so respectful. I don't even think one person got up.
No,
I don't think anyone went to the bathroom. Nobody left. On Tuesday, 2 hours later, probably people got drinks afterwards. People were with their significant others or something.
Yeah.
Everyone was thoroughly uncomfortable, giggling the whole time, laughing during
the whole time people were giggling.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And, like, people were...
I guess I'm not surprised, actually. Like, that's what I would expect to happen.
Yeah.
But then I just had the good fortune of
seeing. And I think Gaspar Noé probably wanted a mix of our... reactions.
I mean, there was definitely stuff in that movie that was just like, I don't want to say shock value, but just like, yep, like we're really doing this. Like,
yeah,
there's a point in the movie where there's just like a penis pointing directly at the screen, and it's being, you know, like caressed by a hand, and then it like ejaculates directly at the camera, and it's in 3D. And, so there's just like sperm flying at you in 3D, which is kind of like transparently just like a like train coming at you type gag.
Yeah. But on purpose, a 3D gag.
Yeah,
but harkening back to Andy Warhol in 3D.
In the context of the movie, it like it wasn't funny at all to me. It was like, oh, this is like abrasiveness.
And it's kind of like it's kind of just like a fuck you to the people that are gonna giggle. Like, yeah, I am gonna do this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like.
But also, when we saw the movie, there's a couple sitting next to Emily and I that left within the first 5 minutes because of the first scene. Like they immediately started laughing and then they left.
And I mean, just, I guess that's nice of them to remove themselves rather than...
And there was a guy sitting to the back left of me, to the right of Sam, and that scene where the penis was being masturbated and ejaculated, he said, like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah, he actually out loud was like, Jesus Christ, oh, come on, man. He actually was angry.
Yeah.
And I think...
Do you think he was angry because it was, like, too cheap, or because it was like, oh, a penis?
I don't know. Show men, vaginas. I think a lot of men...
Yeah,
are uncomfortable with male nudity.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I'm gonna be gay now because I see this sperm and coming at me.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a lot of men in the second showing on Tuesday were very uncomfortable with the male nudity, which is wonderful. I love when people are uncomfortable. But I think that Gaspar Noé probably was just trying to be... I mean, he loves to have a reaction. He wants an audience to give a reaction. And Enter the Void, when it played at Cannes, had a, like... apparently in a standing ovation or like a bunch of applause, and he was all angry that people like liked his movie. He wanted, you know, a reaction.
Yeah.
And so I assume he would much prefer Tuesday's reaction.
Yeah.
To me, I preferred being in a darkened room with people who are very clearly...
It seemed like everyone was immersed.
Immersed and also, like, probably turned on. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people were just,
really?
Like, simmering.
I didn't feel like the movie was that erotic.
No, I feel like people were simmering a lot.
I never felt... I was never like, whoa, nice.
That's interesting because all of the women that I've talked to, which is, like, 4 to 5 people, all said that it was incredibly attractive, like, the most attractive... thing that they've ever seen. Like, people, I don't know what that means.
They've ever seen?
Like, in terms of film.
Oh, okay.
Like, they had, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It had a, like, a very, like, somebody that I knew had
to... It had a very, like, warm, smooth...
Yeah, and I also think it was very intimate, like, caressing and things like that. It wasn't, like, there wasn't a roughness, or, like, and the editing was also kept down to a minimum, which I really appreciate. It wasn't, like, quick cuts trying to sexualize a scene with the edits within it. It would just play out completely. They'd put a camera above the bed and have it play out for 5 or 6 minutes, and it was beautiful.
And I liked talking about the editing, I liked like the blinking that was happening.
Yes, there were a couple frames every now and again of
frames. Forgot about that until now, but all through the movie I was just like, okay, what is this?
Right.
And I had a theory, but now I forget.
I'm pretty sure it's just a reference to, well, there are various movies that do that, I suppose. I think Code Unknown, none of their frames touch in the whole movie. There are long takes, and then when the take ends, there's frames of black, so none of the frames are touching, just
on
a purely technical level.
The sort of blinking, the screen would just go black, but it would be in the middle of a scene.
But I also think that what probably was what Godard did with Breathless, where he just had a bunch of takes... You can't edit them together that well when they're long takes. You blink and then you cut to a different take. That's what Godard did. I think it was...
Isn't it like a rule, like a shot should last as long as, like, in between a person blinking or something?
Oh, I have no idea.
I read that somewhere.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I think it was like... What's his name? Melville? The guy who did, like, The Red Circle. He told...
Moby Dick? Herman?
No. But I'm... he told Godard that... Godard was all angry... Like, and I think that's how you pronounce his name. I never have to say
his
name, so it's
fine.
Don't
worry about it.
But Godard was all upset. He was like, I have so many great takes, but I don't know how to edit in between them. And then Melville was just like, well, why don't you just have a blank frame and cut to a different jump cut, to a different take? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's probably what happened. He was just like, because every single scene seems like it was like a long traversing down a hallway or something like that. And you can't necessarily edit in good conscience.
Yeah, I see
what
you're saying.
Think it was just like an editing purpose?
Yeah, I
do. But it was stylized, right?
It was stylized.
I don't think it just cut to black and then came back. I think that it actually like swiped down and up, literally like a blinking eye.
When I was like, oh, like I is supposed to be.
Or it almost looked like a slide changing on, you know, one of those. So my theory was there's a lot of the movie where he's looking through those little like magnifying glass things at photographs. And I was like, oh, so this is sort of like that. Like, when the pictures are coming in and out, it's like, this whole thing is his memory, like, his set of memories.
Yeah, I was about to say, because a lot of the movie is him just thinking about stuff. So I was like, oh, that's supposed to be, like, we're supposed to remember that we're in his, like, brain or something.
Yeah,
I guess it would be interesting to see if that ever happens, the blinking black frames, if that ever happens in present day. And then also, if it ever happens in between certain things, like, in between emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, two characters are walking and they're feeling happy, and then that blinking frame goes down, and then, it, like, the scene sort of shifts or something like that.
Interesting. If you see the movie, you'll have to watch for that.
Yeah.
I felt, when I was watching the movie, I felt like it happened mostly when, it was, like, a couple times. It was once during the threesome,
mm-hmm.
I noticed, and then there was a couple times it was, like, during dialogue.
Yeah. There was a lot during dialogue, like, when she's banging on the door. No, when he's banging on the door and she's listening to Salem in her room, which I, like, loved. there was, like, a lot of blinking frames during that scene, and I was wondering what that was about.
I don't know.
It was probably just they had so many good takes, they just didn't know what to do with it, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how many takes Gaspar does normally, but I assume it's pretty high.
Send him an email.
I don't know it either.
You don't know it either?
I don't know a...
Oh, my God, that was good. You should just end it right there.
So we all liked the movie, right? Like,
I love it.
It was pretty good.
I love it.
I didn't love it.
I don't think
I would
not
go see it again like you did.
Really?
Yeah.
You would never see it again?
I would, like, I don't have the desire to see it again right now, but in, like, a year or, you know, any time, amount of time past that, I think I would see it again.
I think the reason I would see it again is to be able to think about it more. But I don't think I would ever feel like, oh, I need to watch this movie again. Because I really love Enter the Void, too, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is his first movie that I would like to see again and again, probably because it's a lot calmer, nicer, less mean than his other pictures. I've seen Irreversible twice, and Enter the Void twice.
Yeah.
And I feel like I never need to see them again. They're so mean.
Yes.
And that's what I love about them. But I feel like I don't need to experience that in my day-to-day life. I feel like this movie, while mean, and obviously the main character is supposed to be a horrible man. We can talk about that in a second.
I don't know if that's obvious. I agree with you that he's not supposed to be especially sympathetic, but I don't think it's supposed to be obvious.
I think it's supposed to be obvious that he's just, like, a normal person. He's, like, a normal, normal, like, arty type of joke.
Okay.
But, like, because he's not really arty. Because there's no way that Gaspar would be like, oh, this is, like, someone that's like me in the movie, but his favorite movie is 2001.
Right, I thought the same thing. So there's a point, so obviously the main character is a filmmaker, and at one point in the movie, the girl that he's with for most of the movie, the girl that is his obsession
Elektra.
Sort of throughout the movie. Yeah, her name's Elektra in the movie.
I was thinking, is this with a K or with a C?
Really? Did you think
I like kept seeing the word Elektra with a K.
I think it is with a K.
I didn't think
it is
that
with a
once.
K.
I kept thinking, like, putting the fucking...
what's rock?
Like, he just made rock and roll, like, devil horns.
Oh, my God.
Anyway,
every time she said her name, like, yeah.
There's one point where she asks him what his favorite movie is, and he says 2001: A Space Odyssey, which I think, like, if you're a director and you have a character who's a director in the movie say that, you're kind of being like, oh, what a fucking idiot.
But I think that Gaspar's favorite movie is 2001: A Space Odyssey, and his favorite director is Kubrick.
Well, and also, there's that, the character in the movie whose name is Murphy, he's the main character, he's a director, he's wearing a shirt that says Fassbinder in the, like, Metallica font for
my
a lot of the movie,
wants that shirt.
And, like, Gaspar Noé owns that shirt.
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely some of him in that character.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's supposed to suggest
that
the character is sympathetic, cool, or, like, if that is sort of, like, a self-reflective in a more self-deprecatory way for Gaspar Noé.
I think it's a little bit
open to interpretation.
How do you know he has that shirt?
Because we Googled him after the show, and he's wearing
God.
The shirt.
I do like that Fassbinder shirt, I have to say.
Yeah,
cool
my thought was like, oh, I think we're supposed to realize that this person isn't, like, he's not supposed to be some person that's, like, extremely introspective and, like, arty. He's just, like, this person that kind of likes stuff.
Yeah, like, it was clear to me from the movie that he has never, like, that director is never going to create, Murphy is never going to create anything.
Yeah.
Like, that's, he's a director insofar as that's what he says he is to people at parties.
Yeah. And I also feel like he's supposed to, I don't think he's a sympathetic character for the most of the movie, because I feel like he is a bit of a know-it-all. He's mean-spirited to the people that he loves and cares about. So I think that you're not supposed to necessarily identify with him. I think you're supposed to think, what a terrible, boring man. Yeah. And, like, there are scenes where he's trying to get Elektra to experiment with, like, other women, but he doesn't like when she's around other men, yeah. And he doesn't want any experience with men.
He's very straight.
He's very straight and very boring.
Well, and the movie takes place in France,
mm-hmm.
And he is an American, and there are, like, some moments of comedy, I think, where it's just, like, him being a dumb American.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved, in the beginning of the movie, when they show him, like, his outfit and stuff, and he's wearing, like, khakis, but he has, like, skateboard shoes on, too. I was just laughing. I was like, he looks really American.
I didn't
he
has, see that.
I think it's like Etnies.
Oh, okay.
Shoe or something.
Can I just say?
No, they're Lakai.
Oh!
Yeah, that's what it is.
I don't know that much, yeah.
Lakai, great music video, or not music video, great video set to M83, an M83 song where, like, people skate on stuff, and then, like, as soon as they get off it, it just explodes. Look it up.
Oh, I've seen that.
Look it up on YouTube.
What's it called? I've seen that.
I don't know.
Wait, are these are what?
This is a skate.
It's a brand of shoes. What a stupid.
That's actually kind of. No, that's interesting, because the only reason the main character, the guy who plays Murphy, mm-hmm. this is his first movie, I think, the only reason he ever met Gaspar was because he made $10,000 doing an Adidas commercial in New York City and flew to Paris. And he had a fling, or Gaspar said it was a short story, which I love, with one of Gaspar's friends.
Interesting.
And then he met Gaspar at a party, apparently. And then they sort of got... I think that's really interesting. Anyway, that's another
fun thing. I was hoping you were going to say he, shoes. Like, Gaspar met him skateboarding in the park, so it could be, like, Harmony Korine.
No! No, no, no. It's not like that. I'm sorry.
What were we talking about before we got
I was just
there?
Saying... Well, go ahead.
And whether or not he's sympathetic or not. Go
ahead. I don't think he's a sympathetic character, and I also think that, like, maybe Gaspar is making fun of himself in a way in the movie, because... Not only because... I think he's making fun of himself and also the, like, self-centered, egotistical nature of artists in general, because the main character has a child and names it Gaspar, which incited laughter in both of the screenings. And then also, he is in the film as...
The director, Gaspar Noé, is in the film.
Gaspar is in the film, yes, as a sort of creepy, exploitative man taking advantage of younger people with their sexuality. And he's doing that in a movie where he's making young people have sex for him. And I think that's like...
Penis.
Yeah, if that is in fact his.
And it, like, thrusts directly at the screen.
Yes.
That's significant.
Yeah, and I feel like those are all indications that it's sort of, like, about the egotistical nature of probably a filmmaker, and also probably just himself. I wonder if something like this kind of happened to him, and he's, like, taking his aggression out on himself through this movie or something like that, because it is a very unsympathetic character.
Well, okay, so that's interesting, the question of, like, is this perhaps somewhat autobiographical, because the movie is, while there's a lot of sex in it, is kind of like a story of loss, right? Like, the main character mm-hmm. is sort of torn up about the fact that he's lost Elektra, this girl that he was seeing for a long time that he claims to have loved.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, loses contact with her, worries that she might have died. He sort of, like, ruins the magical thing that they had together. So, given that sort of, like, structure, you would think that the main character has to be normally somewhat sympathetic, because it's like, why would we care about him being torn up about this loss of a relationship, unless we, like, think he's at least an okay guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, at least the standard, like, Hollywood movie, you're not going to watch this, like, this fucking asshole's so sad that his girlfriend left him. An entire movie about that. That, like, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
So I think maybe my first inclination is to say we're supposed to be at least, like, neutral towards Murphy, the main mm-hmm. character of this movie, if not sympathetic. But I like what you just said, that maybe if he is this sort of, like, idiot version of the director...
Or just a younger version.
Yeah, perhaps. The movie is, like, this maybe, like, cathartic, or, like, reliving and just being, like, what a fool I was.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting to me, and I had not thought of that. He is American, and Gaspar Noé is French, I assume, because mm-hmm. his name is pronounced Gaspar Noé. and the movie takes place in France. I guess it'd be really easy to fact check this, huh?
He is okay. from France. He is French.
So there's, like, some distance there, right?
Yeah.
To tie this back a little bit, I think that's why this is a movie that I'd be interested in watching another time. There's, like, a lot of stuff that I'm, like, not necessarily settled on that I think the movie is, like, somewhat intentionally sort of murky on.
Yeah.
Where it's like, wait, what's going on here in, like, a big picture? Like, is this guy cool? Is he lame? Like,
mm-hmm. I don't feel strong enough to want to figure it out, though.
Well, and also...
No, I don't think it's, like, a real, mind-bender. I don't think you're supposed to be, like, thinking, what is it? But yeah. I think it's, like, that stuff's there that if he wanted to, like, think about it more, it would lend itself to be thought about in, you know, consecutive,
I would
not consecutive,
say,
but additional viewings.
I would watch this movie again if I knew no one was going to be home with me, and I wanted to do something and, like, focus on that thing, but also wanted something in the background, and it just has kind of, like, nice colors and stuff, and I could look at it. Except I would, like, look at it and sometimes be like, there's sex happening. That makes me feel weird. So I don't know.
I think that it was better the second time, to be honest.
Interesting.
Because even though the audience was worse,
the audience didn't bother
it.
Me that bad. It was just like, I can't believe people are laughing so much.
I think because I had such a good experience the first time, it was highlighted, the fact that they were so horrible the second time. But I do feel like it was a better movie the second time around because it's such a... With any, like, explicit movie or something where there's, like, a big, you know, draw to it, you're obviously going to be invested in that exclusively during your first... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie's going to be terrifying, and then that's what you're focused on, is, like, the terror. You know what I mean? And then you watch it again, and you're like, okay, let me look at these frames... Let me look at these actors, at the music, at the inner lighting.
Yeah.
And I feel like the second time, I just loved to look at it. You know what I mean? And there was a lot that I thought... it's such a simple movie
mm-hmm.
in how it was made, but I feel like it's beautiful to look at. And, like, not only the colors, but I feel like the lighting...
The lighting is the thing that really
stood out to me. The lighting, the set direction, like...
I know I've said this to you before.
No,
I'm going to interrupt you real quickly. There's just so many shots where, like... The main character is, like, laying on his side
mm-hmm.
With his girlfriend. And then, like, the lighting on his shoulder just, like, highlights the contours in this, like, amazing way. It's like a fucking Greek painting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The Greeks aren't famous for paintings.
Sometimes it looks like it's not real.
His shoulder is, like, marbled and the way the shadow and the highlights on it. And then it's just, like, a red light
mm-hmm.
and with, like, some green shadows mm-hmm. or something. It's fucking beautiful.
Their bodies are,
I've never,
like,
thought that a
the
shoulder
lighting.
Looked so good ever.
Yeah.
I would stare at, like, there's one of the sex scenes there, they show, like, his back. And I was like, I can't believe how good his skin looks.
Yeah. It looks
so perfect. Yeah.
It was marbled.
Yeah.
All of their bodies, and they had, like, what'd you say? Chiaroscuro? The highlights of the, you know what I mean?
I do not know.
There was, like, beautiful cavernous darkness on, like, all of their forms. Do you know what I mean? And it just really just looked so rich and so beautiful. And then when they were in bed and truly, like, immersed in one another, I felt like the rest of the room kind of ebbed away. And there would be, like, you know, there was a shot when she was on that yellow bed, and it's just above the bed, and everything else is, what?
The blonde girl?
No. The yellow bed with Elektra. And there's, like, sort of like a diffuse-looking border around the bed, and there's just complete and utter blackness, like a void around the bed. There's nothing else. And then they cut to another shot, and then you can see the rest of the room. Do you know what I mean?
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, and it's like, I feel like when they're really intimate and in sync, everything else but the bed kind of ebbs away in the room, and it's just so beautiful to look at, especially in three dimensions when there's, like, a foreground and a background, like, distinctly.
That's interesting to think about because that contrasted with the later shots of them, like, trying to make their relationship work again, and they're having sex, like, in an alley,
mm-hmm.
like, or in that bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about, like, oh, look at this disgusting place that they're in.
Yeah, and when they're having sex in that bathroom, and he's from behind, and her breath is on the mirror, and it fogs up the mirror and obscures her. You cannot see her face at all. Yeah. It's obscured. Beautiful, and like, okay, I understand what that means. I feel like
that's happened. That exact thing has happened in a movie before.
I'm not sure. I mean, obviously there's foggy mirrors and like...
No, I like the exact thing where like people are having sex and then the woman's breath like fogs the mirror so you can't see her face. Maybe I'm wrong.
No.
It was still nice.
It was beautiful. Yeah. There were a lot of shots in that movie where I'm like, this could be taught in a school at some point.
So here's a question. How essential do you think the 3D was?
I think it wouldn't have... Well, okay. I think that it is essential completely. I'm going to totally change what I was going to say, because I was going to say 1 second ago that it's not essential, and now I'm going to change that completely and say it's absolutely essential, because I feel like that's how it was envisioned. I'm going to make this 3D movie about sex. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like that's the framework upon what the movie's built around. Do you know what I mean? And so I feel like maybe not for an experience it's essential, but the way that it's filmed, the content of the movie itself, down to like the posters in the background, like Andy Warhol's Frankenstein in 3D, obviously that's on the wall because this is in 3D. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, didn't he have a bunch of Birth of a Nation posters?
He had a Birth of a Nation poster,
which I guess would be like Birth of a Nation specifically, sort of, if you wanted to like compile evidence that like this guy is just a jerk.
Well, yeah, that's true, and like American.
Yeah,
but I also think that a lot of the movies on his walls were like obviously like very controversial movies at their time, like M, and then he had like a Salo right above his bed, which I thought was kind of funny. I thought that was funny, like, that was there.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then there's also a shot of
Gaspar says that's one of his favorite movies of all time.
Salo? Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. That makes sense.
Just quick note, because I watched the Criterion Collection video of him picking out movies from the Criterion Collection.
Oh, I love those.
On YouTube. I could have said that about my YouTube thing, but I forgot
you just got, like, YouTube's in your back pocket.
I do. Yeah. I have a bunch. I don't know what to, I don't know what to do with
it. Like a
what did you think about the 3D?
I really liked it, like, texturally. I liked seeing stuff, and, like, I guess when you're watching, like, a 2D movie, it's like, oh, this looks nice, but, and, like, there's an aspect of the texture, but with the 3D, I, like, it felt nice to feel like there was a lot of depth to it, which I think he was trying to, like, the 3D was the aspect of the movie that was like a big thing, like the depth of it and like the texture of the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I thought it definitely added like a lot to the, like, in times where I wouldn't even realize that I was noticing how far into the shot I could see. So I really liked it, but like I didn't need, like, for like the shots of the, like, the sperm coming out of the penis and stuff, and like
those are the only parts that like seem that it's like really instrumental to task, like, that the specific scene is trying to perform, or just like the gags that don't matter that much anyway.
Yeah, and I would say that like I didn't need that to be 3D for me to understand what he was trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny.
Yeah.
That was, well, and I think it also makes it, like, I think the 3D makes it intimate. If you're going to make an intimate movie and you can feel like you can reach out and touch these people.
Yeah, it felt really real.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
For me, it seemed like someone could watch that movie without 3D, you know, like, rent it off iTunes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're watching it on, like, a relatively nice screen, I think it would still be, like, really beautiful, and I think you could really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that the 3D was sort of, like, very important in, like, a foreground sense, to use a hopefully apt metaphor. But I think it was, like, this subtle enhancement on everything that was going on. Like, the scenes all looked really nice. Like, almost without exception, every shot in that movie just, like, looked nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 3D was just, like, allowed you to access that even more. It was just like literally like another dimension, but just like on the thing that was already good. All the shots would be good without 3D, but then 3D just made them that much more like there.
Yeah.
You know, there was just like another layer of
an icing on the cake.
Thing that was good. Yeah, icing. That's a good way.
Earlier I was trying not to say the word dimension because I was like, I don't want to say it. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought that like it actually added just like one more thing to the movie,
And even on, like, very, very subtle things, like, there's one scene where he's laying down and smoking, and the smoke just casually drifts off into the audience.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
There's a lot of... You could tell that there was a lot of thought put into. It wasn't just, like, when you go see The Avengers 2 in 3D, and like there's a like one shot of like a hammer flying at you a little bit, or, and like, then the rest is
come
just
out because there's an explosion.
Yeah, exactly. Like Monster House was like that if you saw that in 3D, where it's like, oh, the tongue's coming out at you.
I bought it on DVD, and you could have it came with 3D glasses.
Oh my god, you got to watch it in 3D. Yeah. But anyway, it wasn't like that where it's just like it's just like, you know, they're just to it enhances the experience. Yeah. It almost is an experience unto itself. And I think that they did a really great job, and they made it pretty subtle. And then when they went for an extreme thing, it was almost as though it was like audience, just a one-off thing, and like audience validation. Almost like, here's something you want. I know you want this. You might think you don't, but this is why you came here. You know.
So it's sort of like the 3D in this movie was like smoking opium before having sex for the characters.
Oh, sure, exactly.
You can just end the podcast right now.
I feel like I would like to see. Like, I wish there was a way to, like, black out everything that wasn't supposed to, like, pop out at you and only see the things that pop out at you to really know, like, what he's actually intending for that to happen with. Because sometimes you can't really tell.
That's
like,
true.
It's coming out, but, like, yeah, with, like, the sperm and, like, the smoke and stuff, you can't, you can tell, obviously, that it's supposed to, like,
yeah, there were scenes that I kind of just, like, forgot that it was 3D.
Yeah, so I wish I could just, like, know definitively, like, what is supposed to happen like that.
I think they probably just shot it all on 3D cameras, as opposed to, like, a lot of 3D movies, just they make stuff 3D in post.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it was in post or not. It would be fascinating to find out. I would love to get a DVD of this and watch all the extras, because I'm sure, even if it was shot on 3D cameras, I'm sure it was, like, a hassle to walk around with them, you know what I mean? To have these long takes with them, with, like, the panning
light. They did, the movie really got around in terms of, like, being outside, walking down the street.
And it was very insular, like, and I also felt like that's something, if I can, I'm sorry, but
I forgive you.
I'll go back to the, almost felt the first time I watched it claustrophobic in a way, when it was like just shots of them in that one room with like the red lighting, and they're just, and everything's in the foreground, they're all in the foreground, and it's just like,
beginning, I was like a little bit overwhelmed.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it's overwhelming.
And I think part of that is because we had just come from the bar and had like a drink.
No, that might be true.
So then I like came, sat down in this like kind of crowded theater, and that screening room is like a little bit coffin-like.
Yeah.
I think is
that's
how,
true.
How Alex Rue described it.
Yeah,
shout
sure.
Out
oh,
if
that's,
you're listening.
Oh my god, Alex.
So yeah, there was like a little bit where I was like, "Oh, am I like high? No, I'm not. Like this movie's just like a little bit."
Yeah.
Excessive, and I had like one strong beer 10 minutes ago.
I just wanted to like push the frame away from me a couple times, like when they're alone. It just felt claustrophobic in an intimate
but I would say like only at the beginning, maybe
only at the beginning,
kind of,
and then
getting
it opens
into
up
the movie.
The shot that I remember mostly feeling claustrophobic was when they're in the club and like the light the strobe light is going.
When he's yelling at her like, "Who are you dancing
with?" I was just like, "Ugh," like, get away from me.
I loved it.
Like, yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes.
I could almost, like, feel the light on my face. Do you know what I mean? In the fog. Like, it was so thick. The air was so thick. And then I loved when, like, the lighting went directly into the camera lens, so it just disappears a little bit. It's just, like, and, like, right along the, like, the horizon of the lens. Unbelievable to look at. You know what I mean?
It was really cool. Now that I think about it,
but it did make it a little closer.
I think that, like, if there's a time in the movie that you should be experiencing discomfort, it should maybe be more at the end. Because he's, like, really sad. Like, he's, like, really broken up about this whole situation. Mm-hmm. Like, thinks that maybe she's, like, gone and hurt herself, killed herself.
Yeah.
And by the end of the movie, I had just, like, not that we need to be sympathetic to this guy, but I think the movie does want us to be caught up a little bit in his situation.
Yeah.
And, like, the stress of it. Maybe even not for him, but for her as well. Just like the claustrophobia of an ending relationship, which by the end of the movie, I just didn't feel. I was just like, okay, I think the movie's kind of blown its load to some extent. Like, I think I've seen everything, and then this guy's just gonna whimper for maybe like 20 more minutes when really the movie could end right now.
It was that the scene where they're in bed together and he's staring at the camera for like 3 minutes straight? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm thinking about, like, the scene where he's in the bathtub at the end.
Oh, I thought it should. I thought it was, like, supposed to end, like, before that.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's reminiscing, and he's, like,
he turns to his
camera, and his eyes
It goes
just, like,
back
wild.
To that shot that was, like, towards the beginning, right?
I was like, please end right here. I'll be so happy if it ends right now. And then there's, like, 20 more minutes.
When a movie actually does that, there have been movies that actually, I was like, I hope it ends right now. And then it ended right now, and the movie, like, jumped, like, at least 10% in my mind, just because it ended at the perfect moment.
I would have been, like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
immediately. But
I also when he's like banging on her door towards the beginning, that movie has like a real sense of like desperation and maybe not claustrophobia, but like it's intense.
Yeah.
And I wish some of that stuff had been at the end. Because if there's any flaw with the movie, like I did like it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You loved it. Sounds like you liked it similar, maybe more similar to how much I did, which was a lot, but not a load. if there's one criticism I can have is that it kind of just like trailed off.
Yeah, I felt it trailed off. I felt like tired of watching it.
Well, here, let me just say this, if I can defend it, and it's not even a defense. I actually liked it all the way through. I thought the one scene where they're in the park is beautiful, and that has to be in the movie. Anyway, that's not the point.
But does it have to be at that point in the movie? Like, could he have flashed back to
that? This is what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Is that in Into the Void... Okay, this is not so much a defense, but a critique of Into the Void, I suppose. That meanders for forever and a day, and it's horrendous.
So he cut it back.
But in Irreversible, the whole movie is told in reverse chronological order.
Okay.
So you see the destruction of a relationship, and then... how that happened. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So everything that's horrendous in Irreversible happens within the first 30 minutes. And then by the end of the movie, there's 40 minutes, not really, there's 20 minutes of just them, the two main people, laying in bed together, talking, giggling, you know what I mean? And then you can see how the relationship was before all of these horrible things happened that we have already seen. Which is interesting, but I feel like when I watch Irreversible, I'm like, everything that is exciting already happened. Do you know what I mean? I, as much as I like seeing people happy.
And how does this compare to Love?
I think that a lot of the scenes in the end of Love were at either the very beginning, like that scene where they were in the park, or it was like a little bit less desperate. It was more like, let's see how these people acted when they were together, not towards the end of their relationship. So it was kind of like reverse chronological in a sense. And I feel like it had a dull edge.
Abstract structure to it.
It had like a very nice point, like a knife edge at first, and then the movie dulls it to the point where it's like a butter knife at the end. But to me, that's fine because I like their relationship. I like Elektra. I like seeing this man be horrible.
I didn't think
I get to despise him more.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
But then you should want to see him sort of, like, desperate and, like, gasping for air at the end.
Yeah. I don't mind that.
So I'm saying, like, if he had been more desperate, if there had been more of, like, an emotional nervousness, more of that, like, claustrophobia, or more of that desperation that we see when he's banging on the door.
Yeah.
To me, that would sort of, like, drive home what I feel was kind of supposed to be, not the point of the movie, but, like, the genre of the story of the movie, the arc.
No, I understand what you're saying. I feel like when you hear a piece of bad news, you have, like, a sharp pang about it at first. And then the longer you live past that, it ebbs away a little bit. Okay. I feel like that might be what the movie is. He's like, I'm hearing this bad news about Elektra. How did it get here?
Yeah.
Oh, it's all these horrible things. Yeah. And then he's like, God, remember when it was like this? And it kind of like ebbs away into sort of like monotony, I suppose.
I guess that makes sense to me in an abstract sense. It doesn't necessarily change my mind.
It doesn't. No, I'm not saying that it should change your mind. I'm just saying that that might be what it's thinking about. What were you going to say like 10 minutes ago? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I would say that the desperateness of the beginning of the movie made sense to me, but then towards the end of the movie, realizing that we're supposed to come to like some point of their relationship, I almost felt like less, like I was caring less and less because I was realizing that like the relationship doesn't really have much depth to it.
Yeah.
They just like fucked all the time. And like, I was like, okay, that's your relationship, so I don't understand really how you're so upset.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really believe that there was a lot
I couldn't believe that there was...
love.
Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't. And I think that was, like, a point of the movie. Like, look at these people, like, thinking that, like, they have, like, such an intense relationship, but really they just, like, had sex all the time and they...
I guess maybe that's apt.
That is a thing,
that conversation that we're talking about that the character has in the bar, where he's like, I want to make a movie about sex and just making it beautiful.
But it's
and, like,
it was, like,
the movie's called Love, but the movie's... the movie that we watch is called Love, but it's really about sex.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, yeah, and love is good too. And he's like, yeah, both of those things. Like, but the way you do when you're at a party and you're like, I'm trying to talk about this thing. Yeah. You brought up this kind of similar thing, so I'll just, like, roll it in to maybe, like, keep your attention.
Yeah, yeah, but also, yeah, there's a part where Elektra says to him, that's to Murphy, that, like, you don't know
what love true. Is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there are people caught up in something that they think is good, but obviously
it was just meaningless the whole time.
It was. I mean, doesn't it have to be love to her? Because, like, she, you know, she's maybe he's incapable of love, and you know,
is she
whatever.
Really smart though?
I think, but she's a smart, clever person,
like, yeah, pretty devastated by the breakup too.
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe,
right? Like, yeah, she might have killed herself.
Yeah, but was it the?
Oh, she's just kind of this wild person.
Yeah,
anyway.
We don't know if. Like,
that's fair.
She killed herself because of the relationship.
It might not have been because they were in love. It might have just been because that was sort of like the architecture of her life.
It was like 2 years later, right? Yeah. That he was reminiscing.
Really? I guess they have a little kid who can like.
Yeah, it was like a couple of years later. I don't know.
It was 2 years.
Like, she could be totally over the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
she could have just been reacting, like screaming at him while he's banging on the door because she's like a druggy person that like is just on drugs and like being insane.
That's no, true. I feel like no. No. I think that he's supposed to be our...
Wait, do you agree with that or not?
No, I don't think so. Because I think he's supposed to be our disgusting, unsympathetic character, and I think we're supposed to care about her, because she's the one that's being distraught, she's the one that's being yelled at, she's the one that's trying.
Then why isn't she the main character?
Because I think that it's about this man.
I think it's about
Gaspar.
It's about the selfishness of Gaspar.
Yeah, okay. I think it's about the selfishness of this male character, and the destruction that it kind of wreaks. And I think that she's supposed to be our, like... She's supposed to be us in a way, where we're like, oh, God, can you believe being attached to this person? Well, you know, we still care about them. I don't know why we do, but we do,
and
we're attached
just, like,
to them.
A douche.
And he's horrible.
Maybe.
Go ahead.
At that showing, mm-hmm. Gaspar would have been so happy if everyone stood up and said, like, you're an asshole, and, like, threw stuff at him, because he ruined his relationship with Elektra.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Maybe
yeah.
he's like, this is my confession.
This is
I ruined
like
everything.
Penance. Yeah.
Yeah, like, everyone beat me up right now because
right.
I ruined my life. Yeah.
I can see that, for sure.
I like that. Let's wrap it up. So if you see Gaspar, no way.
Just give him a punch.
Punch him right in the dick.
Oh my god.
Tune in next time to hear us talk about other genitals you should punch. No, do you guys have anything else to say?
No, I have nothing else to say. I would see it, for sure.
I wouldn't see it again, but I would recommend it to someone who...
Don't watch it, like, with a bunch of friends at a party.
Yeah, watch it, like, maybe with one other person.
Someone you
yourself.
Can trust not to be weird about seeing a bunch of, like, dicks. And
it's
stuff.
Supposed to be fairly intimate, even though I think quite a bit of it is supposed to be jokey and hokey and a gag. I think that for the most part, it's supposed to be an intimate, somewhat touching, simple story.
If you're trying to, like... really get along with your dad and want to do stuff together, just watch this movie.
Yeah, that's...
that's a terrible suggestion!
No, I think that's true.
I'm
after
gonna
you
watch
play,
it with my dad.
Yeah, I think you go out golfing.
Oh, brother.
You're like, God, let's get some Burger King
some
and
Mike's
just watch...
Lemonade.
Yeah, and then go and watch this movie. I think that's true.
Eat
and I
popcorn
think,
from the same bucket while you're doing
you should, it. You should fade out us talking about all the things you do with your dad into the outro music.
I will. This is all just...
It's like perfect fade out.
It'll have no good.
Yeah.